Birth Association and IndieBirth.com. No material on this podcast should be considered medical advice. Birth is not a medical event.
Welcome to IndieBirth series of podcasts here on iTunes, Taking Back Birth. So, good morning. This is Maren, and today we're going to talk about tearing at birth. This is one of my most favorite topics, which might sound kind of funny, but from a standpoint of finding your own voice, finding your own power, and starting to question absolutely everything that we do routinely in the U.S. here around pregnancy and birth, in that respect, this is one of my favorite topics. I love talking about these issues. But I say that a lot, don't I? I love talking about most of these issues, or I probably wouldn't be talking about them. So again, vaginal perineal tearing today in birth. I wish there was a better word than tear. Maybe we'll get to that at some point during this podcast. Sounds so severe, doesn't it? Sounds pretty violent. Today we're going to talk about that, among other things, and address some myths about birth and, again, about our bodies and how they function and how they look and do afterwards, after birth. So as always with these podcasts in particular, my point is to cause you, hopefully, to rethink everything, to question everything, and expand your horizons, as I try to do on a regular basis. And remember, these are my thoughts. They don't have to be yours. And there's never any absolutes. So whether it's postpartum hemorrhage or something like tearing, it's not something that should be happening to everyone, ideally, in birth, that these are rare instances. And that's why we're questioning the routine use of certain things, whether it be drugs or sutures. But again, this is to make you question and explore your options. So again, I think that tearing at birth should be really rare. And unfortunately, because most women are not experiencing physiological births, regardless of location, really, tearing is more common. And we'll get to that too. But it should be rare, I think. Normal, healthy women birthing normal, healthy babies. Severe tears should be rare. So that's where I'm coming from, at least to start this podcast. But I think our wording is really important. So, you know, on other podcasts, I'm sure I address this on a different subject matter. I know I have a blog post or two about the words we use when we're talking about our experiences in pregnancy and birth. And I do think tearing is one of those words. I don't know that I'm going to substitute it for the rest of this talk, just so that we're all on the same page. And to be honest, I haven't really thought about what I would replace it with, because in some cases, we are wanting to address what the general thought is about something like a tear. But something for you to think about, when you're thinking about your own body in particular, I think it's really meaningful. And here at Indie Birth, we talk to lots of women every week. Many of them are planning holistic physiological births, whether that's with a midwife or unassisted as a free birth. And many of these women, even with that desire, have this fear come up about what if I tear? And again, I'm hoping that we can start to rethink the way we speak and the way we view our bodies and the way we view birth in regards to this issue. So probably not a surprise, but just to give you a sense of what the medical world thinks about, you know, tearing and our bodies during birth. This is from an Irish Medical Journal study in 2008. And the name of the study, for whatever that's worth, is called Correlation of Perineal Outcome at First and Second Vaginal Deliveries. So they were just looking at, tearing in births first someone's first birth and then what that meant for their second birth. But really, the study itself isn't terribly important. It's more the wording that I'm trying to draw your attention to right now. So this came out of the study, this quote: most women having a vaginal delivery can anticipate perineal suturing because of perineal trauma sustained during childbirth. Excluding instrumental deliveries, 75% of women require perineal repair following primiparous vaginal delivery. So, lots of technical words in there, but even if you don't know what every word means, can you get the feeling of, again, women as machines? Birth is something that happens to them. And here's the expert sort of standing on the pedestal, I think. That's what it sounds like. An expert standing on a pedestal talking about vaginal deliveries, one of my least favorite words when it comes to birth. And really, I mean, this is serious. Most women having a vaginal delivery can anticipate or substitute fear. We can anticipate, perineal suturing because of perineal trauma sustained during childbirth. So I could probably talk about this all day, but I won't. You get the idea. That perineal suturing is almost required because birth is so horrible and awful and dangerous to our bodies. And that's just a normal birth, because we're not, you know, we're excluding instrumental deliveries when they say that 75% of women will require perineal repair. So what on earth, you know, would that mean to sort of your average woman, should she care to read this study? I know what it means to even women we come across that are really educated. And, you know, again, what does it mean when you're having your first baby and you come across something like this? How frightening that is, if you take it seriously and if you believe it, that birth is harmful to our bodies, that we will sustain injury, we will be traumatized. Our tissue, our bodies will be traumatized, and then someone will need to come and fix it with technology, you know, with a needle, with thread. I think that's awful. But my point is, this is the general feeling about birth in the mainstream Western world that we live in. So let's rethink that. Let's find our own power away from that. But that's where, you know, that's where most of the world is coming from, if you didn't already know. So I think it's another example of fear in birth. There's so much fear surrounding birth, and I don't necessarily want to focus on that. But again, when normal, healthy women, educated women at that, are a lot of them scared of tearing, of scared of birth because of the trauma to their bodies, then I think we need to address it. I think we need to rethink these things because this kind of fear can control us. It can alter the decisions we make, just like many things in birth. So women that maybe are really scared of tearing, maybe they were told they tore in the past, may not attempt a birth without, you know, somebody that can suture there, for example. So how does this affect the decisions we make for our whole entire experience? So my own personal story, I always like to share my personal stories. Hopefully you don't mind. I have had a hospital birth. That was my first birth. And to be 100% honest with you, I have no idea what tearing I sustained during that birth. I'm pretty sure there was something. I'm pretty sure I was sutured. And it's almost embarrassing to admit, I have absolutely no idea what happened. As far as that goes. And the best I could do at this point, 12 years later, is to get my medical records. And I admit I have not done that. So again, I have no idea. But my point in telling you this is I think I'm not alone. I think most women that have had a hospital birth experience, most of them have no idea if they tore, how bad it was, what it looked like, what the deal was, did it need to be sutured, did it not. Nobody ask them, most likely. And if it did need to be sutured, according to the doctor, then it just was, you know, while she was holding her baby or while her baby was across the room. So I think that's a really interesting issue. So that was my first birth. And let's see, in my second birth, I was told I had a tiny tear. And this was a home birth. And the midwife applied some super glue, but I don't remember visualizing the tear or looking at the tear myself, which, you know, was probably my choice. And then with my third birth, I was a midwifery student at that point, and I do remember looking with a mirror, and the midwife that attended my birth, which was the one that I was working with, pretty much convinced me that I needed to have it stitched. And, you know, I was working with the knowledge I had at the time. I did trust her, and so I did allow her to suture it. And it was a very, very painful experience. And after that, I told myself that I would never again be sutured at home unless I really needed to. And again, I don't know that I really needed that with that birth. I just took her advice, basically. But it was not a pleasant experience. So with my fourth, fifth, sixth, and seventh births, I've been more attentive. I obviously knew more technically as a midwife and have visualized my own body after birth. And each and every time, this is all pretty personal, I suppose, but I don't mind sharing it. Each and every time I do have a little tear near my perineum, and I'm pretty sure it's the same place every time. And I have not gotten it stitched up for the last four births. That is not something I wanted. That was not something I even entertained. And we'll go into, you know, natural healing and how to make that choice possibly. But for me, that was the right choice. And I'm happy with that choice. And I don't at all regret being sutured again, especially at home. That was really awful. So that's my full disclaimer. That's been my experience. And it certainly has shaped my experience and my suggestions to women, although I do try to lay it all out there, and hopefully you'll get that today, that, you know, I am biased in the sense of my own experience, but basically, I think we all need to make our own choices, and I think we need to have enough information to make our own choices for our own bodies. But that's my own story. And that is part of my past. So we're mostly going to focus today on what we would consider normal, healthy, physiological birth, and that does usually happen at home. I don't know how much more I'll address hospital birth and tearing, just because it just goes against everything that I talk about on a natural basis, on a normal basis, I should say. So the fear of tearing is really common. And again, I hear this all the time, and it's not just women that haven't had babies, it's women that have. And, you know, some of them, maybe they were, again, told they had a tear, some know they have a tear, some really did legitimately tear in a serious way. I mean, there's all kinds of variations on why a woman would come to an upcoming birth with this fear. So where does this fear come from? Let's say that this woman hasn't had a baby before, so she doesn't have any experience with actually tearing yet. Where does this fear come from? I think it comes from a couple places, and we talked a little bit about that, and it's mainly the outside world. So episiotomies. Hopefully everybody listening knows what an episiotomy is. An episiotomy is a cut of the vaginal perineal tissue at the time of birth that is done intentionally. So it's not a natural tear that the body does on its own. It is a tear, it is a cut. It is a cut put there by somebody else, and most usually a doctor. Midwives very rarely cut episiotomies, at least at home. It would be an extreme circumstance that that would happen. So doctors, of course, are the ones that often do this routinely. And if you're in that world or have been, as I was 12 years ago, kind of everybody knows, I think, at this point to ask that question. Even women that haven't received a lot of education about birth and the natural process seem to know, you know, asking the doctor, how often do you cut an episiotomy, or what's your episiotomy rate, or whatever. And I think, you know, most doctors, I could be wrong, but most doctors in 2014 now at least have the sense to say, oh no, we will never do that unless medically necessary, which is a whole other podcast. But again, it doesn't seem like it's being done routinely anymore, but yet the damage has been done. I think this is where the fear of tearing comes from, even though tearing is not an episiotomy. An episiotomy is a cut. But again, I think that's part of the culture that has been around for the last, however, 20, 30 years. And we just have kind of adapted to it and held this fear. So, you know, I think it is pretty normal to hold a fear of being cut by somebody else for a reason that you can't identify. But then here we are planning unassisted births or physiological births, and somehow we've just culturally held on to this fear. That's my opinion anyway. Something else that kind of goes along with it is perineal massage, and that's in quotes for me because I think it's ridiculous. But in case you don't know, perineal massage is something that many people purport to be a way to prepare your body, to prepare your vaginal tissue and your perineum for the sensation of crowning and birth. And I actually did this to my own body 12 years ago before my hospital birth, just because it was probably suggested to me by somebody and I thought it would help. And, you know, whether it did or not, I really couldn't say. I don't think so. And it's not something I recommend. Although I think if women have this information, you know, what is perineal massage? How do you do it? Why would you do it? Does it improve outcomes? Does it reduce tearing? Then, of course, make your own decision about that. And if somebody really feels like this is the way to go and they want to do it, then by all means. But I personally didn't do it ever again after that. It just kind of bothers me. It seems really unnecessary. And I wonder why we would need to prepare this way. Women have been having babies for, you know, since the beginning of time. And if we understand the physiology more about the way our bones stretch with the hormones of labor and the way our tissue stretch with the hormones of labor, and if we understand, you know, the way birth works and the fetal ejection reflex and a million other things, then in a normal circumstance, why would we need to prepare our tissue in this way? And you have to ask yourself, is it really preparatory in the first place? I think that could be debated. So, again, my point here is in mentioning this is, does this add to our fear of tearing? Because what if you think that perineal massage is necessary? What if you think you have to do that to be able to allow your tissues to stretch during birth? Well, what if you don't do it and you believe that? You know, what if you learned the information too late, or who knows why you didn't do it? But then I can totally see being afraid of this crowning, of this birth experience, because you feel unprepared. You think you missed something. And without this perineal massage, somehow your body's going to be extra damaged or something. I don't know. I'm only guessing here. But again, I'm talking about, where does the fear come from? Another place the fear comes from is along the same lines, for sure, is this male approach. And, you know, most obstetricians, I think it's safe to say, are male and have been in the past for sure. It's safe to say that when we put them in charge of our birth process, as 99% of women do, then what we get with that is their thoughts and their opinions on our bodies at birth, which is crazy. But that's what we're getting, even if we don't know it, even if it sort of sneaks in there. What do men think about women's bodies during the birth process? Well, unless this male is educated, I think, and supportive of a holistic process, then I think the general feeling is that our bodies are broken after birth, that somehow they're damaged and, you know, not perfect anymore. And when a male is involved in birth from this standpoint and is put in the role of someone who fixes, right? And that's an obstetrician, a surgeon, someone who corrects what has gone wrong, then this male doctor, looking at even a normal postpartum body, you know, a body where a baby has just come out, is going to see imperfection and is going to see a need for repair, regardless of the severity of any tear that may actually be there. So I think many of you listening are already of that understanding. But if you're not, or if you're, you know, new to all these concepts, then just consider, you know, it's not that males are bad or anything like that, but because we're putting them above us in this process in most cases, we have to try to see their perspective. And because they don't have babies and they don't have vaginas, I don't know how we can really do that. But again, I think even if it's well-meaning, they've put themselves and we've put them in this role of fixer. So that's what we're going to get, is them needing to fix. Just a little bit more about what I mentioned earlier with my own experience, which is when women are sutured or stitched up in a hospital setting, it is most often a mysterious process. So find me, you know, a million women that know what happened after their hospital birth, and I will be really shocked. And I bet you that most don't. They don't know if they tore. They don't know if they were repaired. They might know if they were repaired more often than not, perhaps just because it's often painful. But ask them if they know what sort of tear they had. And I bet you many of them can't say. And sure, you know, if they're holding their babies, that's great. It's great to be bonding with your baby instead of worrying about your bottom. But my point is that many women, most women, give this away to somebody else. And it's usually a doctor in a hospital. So how can we release this fear about tearing when we don't even know what's going on with our own bodies? Oh, yes. And we've all heard of the stereotypical male doctor that sutures up a woman because he's worried about her husband, you know, having sexual pleasure from her stretched out vagina later in life or, you know, in the postpartum period. That's perhaps an older sort of stereotypical myth, but, you know, I'm sure it still exists. And many women might be under that assumption. So, you know, let's not blame it on the male doctors. I'm sure there are women out there who think that stitches after birth are necessary because they don't want a stretched out vagina for their husbands or for themselves, you know. But we'll get to those myths eventually. But again, addressing the fear and where it comes from. Last but not least, I think, no, maybe not last but not least, but another one that goes along with this too is the idea that it's not really an idea. I think it's fact that stitches, sutures in any part of your body are really more part of a surgical operation. I believe that if you need sutures seriously because you've really torn through, you know, your rectum, for example, which is just awful to imagine, that you want a surgeon to do that repair. At least I would. If that were my body, I sure wouldn't want some midwife that's only sutured up, you know, two people in the last year, God bless her, you know, suturing my rectum. And most midwives wouldn't even attempt it, so it's sort of a moot point. But my point is, if you were to seriously tear legitimately, I don't know about you, but I would want a surgeon to do that. Doctors are surgeons, and there is a time and place for the skills that they have. But again, if most women are being sutured, especially after a hospital birth, what does this mean? It means birth is surgical, you know, and obviously these women haven't had, you know, C-section surgeries, but the idea that birth is surgical and we need help from a surgeon. And that's supposed to be no big deal, which of course to me is a super big deal, just what that says to women. And of course, tears are more likely in hospital settings anyway, because more babies, you know, obviously than at home are being born by forceps and by, you know, these sort of very intrusive means that are more likely to cause harm to our bodies. So a couple other ones that make us scared of tearing. Myths of the big baby and myths of baby's position, posterior to be exact. So women, again, not wanting to grow a big, healthy baby in many cases when they don't have all the facts because they're scared that the baby won't be able to get out and that, at best, they'll tear. So obviously, these are all concerning fears and they're all legitimate fears, just culturally. And perhaps based on your individual experience, it's not to poo-poo these fears at all. In fact, that's why I'm talking about them today. They're very real for many women. And I think if we examine them more closely and we talk about tearing more closely, perhaps we can help these fears dissipate for many women. So obviously a real concern with suturing anyway is that often the mom and baby have to be separated or are separated. Whether they have to be is another matter. But even at home births, I've seen that be a problem, you know. Even if it's just because the mom doesn't really want to hold her baby, you know, when she's being sutured because it's uncomfortable and painful and she's laying there flat on her back and, you know, it can be quite an experience. So beyond our own bodies, let's consider that when we give away our power and we don't necessarily need to be sutured for whatever reason, we are also affecting bonding and attachment with our babies. So there is a lack of knowledge about how to prevent tears in the first place, and I'm not going to go into each and every one of these things right now because I've addressed them on other podcasts, but there is a way to prevent tearing, and of course there's going to be someone listening, there always is, that says, you know, you can't prevent everything, or I did all of these things and I still tore, and then that's totally legitimate. Sometimes things happen that we can't prevent, obviously, we can't control birth. We can't control the whole process. But we don't give prevention enough of our attention, in my opinion. So we're not talking about the cases that aren't preventable. Because sometimes babies decide to do funny things. Maybe the baby decides to come out with both hands next to his face, and our bodies, you know, do tear in the process of doing that extra stress stretch. So it's not 100% here, but prevention is something that can be done by everybody. And really, you increase your chances of everything being good when you focus on good nutrition, which in turn has so much to do with our skin integrity and the way it stretches. If we understand that coached pushing during birth is not ideal for our bodies, our pelvic floors even, or our babies, that it's stressful for babies as well, that we should allow our bodies to bear down naturally without anybody shouting or counting at us, without anybody telling us it's time because we're the mythical 10 centimeters, we should allow our bodies to go through the natural physiological birth process. And again, I can't go into all of that right now, but if you're curious about, you know, what is that process or how do the hormones work or what is physiological birth or how does the uterus push the baby out without any help from us, then you know, you need to take our 5-week online birth class where we go into detail about how to actually have one of these physiological births, or at least plan for one, or at least have the information. So pushing positions, of course, is part of this physiological birth process that most women, when left alone to do the good work of birth with naturally flowing hormones and a healthy mom and healthy baby, will choose positions that make sense for their body, whatever that means. And again, the best chance of not tearing or leaving our bodies as, you know, as unblemished as possible, because I don't think perfection is necessarily something we should aim for in birth, at least after the fact. You know, it's a athletic event here. But anyway, the positions we choose naturally will give us the best chance of, you know, just having a healthy birth and having least stress to our babies and our bodies. The final thing that most women don't seem to know about, and many midwives don't pay attention to either, is just getting your hands off the woman's body. You know, don't have any hands on you unless that's really what you want for some reason. But most women, again, when they're following the natural process, they don't like to be observed. They don't like to be talked to. They don't like to be watched. And they definitely don't want someone's hands on their vagina and their perineum when a head is coming through. I mean, I have not met somebody yet that wants that. I think a lot of women allow it because they think that's what they should do, or they just don't know to ask questions. And because they've hired a midwife for a quote unquote holistic birth at home, they just allow the midwife to make whatever choices she thinks she needs to make, even in a, you know, non-emergent situation. But hands on your body, on that part of your body, when a head is being born, is not desirable. not desirable at all. Your own hands down there is the best thing you can do for your own body and your baby. Because just like when you have an itch, you know where to scratch it. It's just like that when a head is coming through your body. Your brain communicates to your tissues and your hands, and there is an unspoken way of touching your own body and your own baby's head if you need to and if you want to. You will know just where to touch. And there is no one else in the world at that moment that knows where to touch or what that feels like. So this routine thing of putting compresses or hands or stretching or deflexing the head in normal circumstances, it's ridiculous, and we should stop allowing this routinely because I think this is how many women sustain tears that are more serious, especially at home. So we need to have this knowledge, and again, if you're interested in the nitty-gritty of all these things, then take our course because we talk a lot more about them there. Pelvic floor health in general is another issue. So, you know, tears are generally, when they're minor, surface injuries, should we say. Literally, you know, a tearing of the perineal skin or maybe a little bit into the vagina or, you know, possibly into muscle. But pelvic floor health in general is slightly different in that, you know, that may overlap or does overlap with when we're talking about muscles. But our entire pelvic floor is a complex system and isn't just surface. And, you know, it comes back to many of the things I've said already, which coached pushing, for example, can really damage our pelvic floor, all of our muscles. And certain positions may. And, you know, allowing someone else to tell us what to do when. But how do we take care of our pelvic floor in general, not just at the time of birth? We must take care of our pelvic floors all of the time. And Katie Bowman, I've mentioned her many times, KatyBowman, Katie Bowman, is an amazing resource for pelvic floor health. So I won't go into that right now. But to give you a feel for what she's talking about, she talks about how we are too modernized basically in our daily life. We drive cars, we sit on couches, we sit on chairs. We don't understand the way the pelvic floor works. We don't understand how to take care of it and how to stretch it and exercise it. And so when we get to birth, many women are physically unprepared. So this could be why more women are experiencing severe tearing. Because really, you know, don't you think to yourself that, you know, in the history of childbirth, it couldn't be that women destroyed their bodies in birth? It couldn't be because, you know, we wouldn't be here or we would have sort of evolved in a way that, you know, dealt with that if childbirth was really that damaging to our bodies. So I don't believe it has to be, but I do think that it is happening more than probably should. And again, it's because we're not taking care of our bodies. You know, we're wearing high heels, we're running on treadmills, we're doing all the things that Katie says not to, including Kegels. So again, look her up. She has a great article on not doing Kegels. And once you understand the way the pelvic floor works in general, then I think you'll be better prepared for a normal birth. And probably if you do have tearing, it will be minor and not a whole big deal. So that brings me to my next point, which is, do we have unrealistic expectations about our bodies and about our vaginas after birth? I think we do. And again, maybe this goes back to this male vision that somehow we're going to be 100% perfect again, and anything that isn't perfect will fix. Is that what we want? Is that what we want to teach our daughters about normal, healthy birth? And again, I'm excluding any serious tearing issue here. I'm talking about minor tears that really are just cosmetic, that don't affect our function. You know, we can still pee and poop and have sex. These minor tears, what are we communicating to ourselves and again to our daughters when we talk about tearing in such a way that we're scared to death of it? You know, what about embracing that our bodies do great work during birth and sometimes they tear a little, just like we get a scratch, you know, sometimes when we're just doing something normal in our daily life? What's the big deal, really? I don't know. I think that's a good question to ask ourselves. And I know personally, I've asked myself that and kind of come to terms with, you know, again, the small tear that I've experienced with my own births. You know, I guess in a perfect world, maybe that wouldn't have happened. But in a way, it's just part of birth to me. You know, the way stretch marks are and the way our abdominal muscles will probably never be the same. But I think with normal, healthy diets and a normal, healthy life, we can go on. You know, we can have minor tears and we can take care of them and we can say, yep, that's what happened when my baby came out. And that's what happens to many women when their babies come out. But, you know, no big deal. An important point is we'll never be pre-baby again. If you've had a baby, you'll never be pre-baby again. You can be post-baby. You know, you'll never have not been pregnant again. Your body will be post-baby. And I think there's something really beautiful and wonderful about that because you've had this life pass through you and there is change. There's change on every level, right? Every level. Physical is just one area that we have change. So I think that's really something important to think about. And again, it's not to make choices for anybody. If you have a minor tear and cosmetically, which means just looks, you know, it's really bothering you and you want somebody to suture it so that it looks, you know, like it did before, then that's your business. I just think it's important to question the bigger message, you know, the bigger picture message we're putting out there for women that haven't birthed yet, whether, you know, it's our friend or 20 years from now, our daughters, because that's, you know, I think a largely a male vision that everything needs to go back to being the way it was and needs to be perfect when that's not the way it is. And that's not the experience that most women actually have. So a very important point that I want to bring up as well is when we're talking about unrealistic expectations about our bodies, what about our expectations about life in the immediate postpartum? And I know I've seen this before with women I've worked with who have several kids. Maybe they have two and they've just had a third. And they want to be stitched or sutured, not because it's a major tear at all, but because they want to get back to their lives really quickly. And having a minor tear means resting and healing and respecting your body and taking it easy. And I think it is an issue to want to be sutured so that you can get up and run around and do laundry and walk around the block and take your kids to school. Again, that's your choice. But step back for a minute and just look at what you're communicating, you know, to your daughters. And is that really what you want? Because most women, I think, if given half a chance, will rest and will like to rest for at least a couple days after the baby. I don't think most of us are absolutely dying to get back to doing wash and doing dishes. But there's that expectation. And you can listen to my postpartum podcast if you're interested in a sacred postpartum arrangement for yourself. But there's this expectation that, you know, we get back to life, lickety split. Big deal, you had a baby, you know, get back to your responsibilities. I think tearing can be the perfect excuse, even a minor tear, any kind of healing can be a perfect excuse for everybody else to say, hey, look, I need to rest. And it's going to be at least 10 days until this tear is completely healed. So I'm going to just be here with the baby. Hey, whatever it takes, right? Because that's actually a really wonderful postpartum to have those 10 days or 14 days with your new baby in bed or in your room. But again, I think we need to question that and consider that maybe, just maybe, minor tearing is a part of most women's natural process. Now, not every woman is going to have any tear at all. I, you know, have certainly witnessed many women birth with no tearing at all. And I'm talking 9.5, 10-pound babies even. So, you know, size has nothing to do with it. Who knows why? But, you know, just to say that most women or many women won't necessarily tear. But if you do, and if you do in a minor way, like many of us, perhaps that is a message. Perhaps that's a message from the bigger process to say, hey, you know, this is part of the experience. This is what we need to rest. So consider that. Again, I don't think this is being taught out there in the larger world. I don't know. you know, for sure. But I know there are many midwives that aren't really educating women in this way. And it's because they can suture and will suture. And that's great and all. Again, if you want it, but I think there are some questions to be asked of attendants that are going to be with you at your birth as far as suturing goes. So what does it say to women when we tell them they just need a stitch? And I've seen that attending births with other midwives. Again, my personal philosophy is if it needs a stitch, as in one or two, why bother? You know, it's a serious thing to put a foreign object like suture material into your body. It's not a little deal, or at least it isn't a little deal to me. It's kind of a big deal. And what is that saying? How many midwives go to births and say that to somebody? You just need a stitch, or, oh, that would look better with a stitch. They're not really talking about natural healing. They're not talking about rest. And I think the bigger issue is there's something about you need my assistance. And maybe I'm being crazy. You know, maybe that's just my opinion. And it is. It is my opinion. But I believe women can birth without help from anybody. I believe most women are perfectly capable of birthing babies without hands on them, without being told what to do. And I most definitely think we don't need anybody to save us after the birth either, in normal circumstances. So again, a minor tear, why? Why do you need someone's help with that? Or why do you want someone's help with that? Or again, the more relevant way of putting it is someone saying to you, oh, it's just a stitch. Let's just do a stitch. Interesting, right? And I know women are thinking that, at least many women that I talk to, because women planning unassisted births even are saying, you know, should I have someone come look at my bottom after birth? Well, maybe that's your choice. But again, it's a major concern for many women having unassisted births is to have that certain someone to come after the birth and perhaps stitch them. And again, if that's what you want to do, go for it. But I don't think people are thinking of all these things. I don't think they have all the information. So did you know that there were a couple papers written, as in, you know, scholarly papers, 1999 and 2000, on this growing trend of midwives and mothers to recognize that there are actually negative effects of suturing minor tears. So that may be a newsflash to you, and I don't actually mean that sarcastically, because there was a time in my training when I had no idea that a suture could really be negative. I watched one midwife in particular that I worked with, pretty much suture everybody after normal, healthy home births. And I didn't at the time really think that, you know, there was anything negative about being sutured. But there is, and we'll get to that. It is commonplace that first degree tears are left alone. So those are going kind of superficially through the perineal skin. And it's commonplace that they're left alone with the disclaimer of they're not bleeding too much. You know, you don't want to bleed too much from a tear. And most don't, especially when they're minor. And that the skin looks like it's going to heal together. So those are kind of the two rules that most midwives go to when visualizing a tear or looking at it, is that, is it bleeding too much? No. Okay. That's good. And does it look like it's going to heal together, you know, or is it gaping open? And as long as it's not gaping open and not bleeding, then we leave them alone, the first degree tears. Many people think second degree tears, which go through some muscle, must be sutured. And I know I learned that in my training, that anything, you know, that looks like second degree must be sutured. But I've actually heard from doctors that it doesn't have to be. So there was a study in 2000, Lindquist was the name of the study, and it was limited to small second degree tears. But they found in the study that leaving second degree tears alone improved breastfeeding. No surprise there. And quote from the study, there were no deleterious effects compared with suturing and more complaints from sutured women regarding discomfort from sutures. So, yeah, in many cases, even anecdotally, that of course was a real study, but I know in my own world, anecdotally, that women have said to me, that suturing was more painful and it didn't heal as well. So, you know, depends on the person, but that's the opinion of many women, and apparently not just opinion, that is an actual study. Another study, 2006, Langley was the name of the study. They looked at larger second degree tears, but still they were not bleeding too much and they were laying together. So by all accounts, you know, a good tear, if there is such a thing. And they found that the non-sutured group healed slower. I don't think that's terribly surprising. But yet at 6 weeks postpartum, the non-sutured group was the same as the sutured group as far as healing. So by 6 weeks, they were the same. And this study, the Langley study, followed up at 1 year with these women, all of them, the sutured group and the non-sutured group, and there were no differences that they found. So there you have it. At the very least, leaving second degree tears alone should be an option. So it's a good question to ask of somebody attending your birth. And it's a great question to ask, you know, after your own birth. Ask to see a tear if you think you have one. Have somebody show you what they see if they want to look or you want someone to look. Be really informed. And I know, you know, having been there that it's easy to want to just forget about it, right? You're holding your baby. The last thing you want to do is look at your own bottom with a mirror and make a choice. But it's really a time-sensitive issue. And if you do tear, you know, whether it be minor or major, I think it's best to know then. Because later, it's very difficult to tear up something or suture up something more serious. And even if it's minor, I think you should want to know because you know, you may decide to take the route of natural healing methods. Okay, this is getting long, but some suggestions for all of you from my perspective as far as tearing goes and fear of tearing. So again, prevent as much as you can. Look into nutrition that supports tissue integrity. Learn about physiological birth. Learn about the fetal ejection reflex and how that works. Learn about pelvic floor health, a la Katie Bowman. And learn about hormones and how this affects how our bodies birth. And, you know, the fetal ejection reflex alone is just super interesting because most women, not all, but most women experiencing a natural ejection of the baby will do it in an upright position. And we do know from other studies that upright positions are often associated with the least amount of tearing for whatever reason. So another suggestion, as mentioned, is to examine yourself after birth, as pleasant as that probably doesn't sound. It's not that bad. Get somebody to help if you want. Get them to hold the mirror. If they, you know what they're looking at, then ask them to tell you what they see. And look at it or get your partner to look at it. You know, don't neglect this part of your experience because it's not something you feel like doing or you don't think you need to care. This is your body. Nobody's going to care more than you do. And then you can make the best decision for yourself, whether that be a suture or whether that be nothing. Understand how sutures work to the best of your ability. You know, sutures really are to hold the skin together. That is the purpose and function of sutures. And I remember being a student and thinking that sutures did something magical, that sutures were somehow superior to what our bodies could do naturally. That is not true at all. If you're bleeding, you know, from this tear, then again, sutures might be warranted, but understand what they actually do, which is they hold the skin together. They are not better at all than natural healing. And they may be worse, really. So things you'd want to consider when you were considering sutures, especially for a minor tear, would be what's the skill of the person you're asking to do it. And again, this isn't to, you know, talk down about midwives. I myself don't suture. And again, I wouldn't because I would suture so little that I wouldn't be very good at it. And if there was something that truly needed to be sutured, then I would prefer that a professional surgeon take care of that. I am not a surgeon in any sense of the word. So again, what's the skill of the person you're asking to do it? How often do they suture? Do they feel confident? You know, many midwives will. They only do it a couple times a year, which is great for them. But, you know, then you can have my experience, my third baby, which is it took an hour and a half to, you know, do a couple stitches, which is ridiculous and very painful for the woman. Sutures may result in infection, for a variety of reasons. You may be allergic to the sutures. You may have an allergic reaction to this foreign substance in your body. You may be allergic to the anesthetic used. And again, back to the skill of the person, you know, if they don't do it a lot or whatever, or if they're inexperienced or new, they may pull the sutures too tight. They may be too loose. I mean, again, sutures are not better than natural healing in the case of a minor tear. So you really want to know to the best of your ability what you're going to get if you choose that. It's not just a fix-all. Natural ideas for healing is just good nutrition, vitamin C, raw organic honey is great for minor tearing. Seaweed can be used, super glue can be used, essential oils can be used. Helichrysum is one that's fabulous and will literally knit the skin back together. And then there's herbal baths and herbal compresses. Comfrey in particular is great. So again, you could assemble sort of your own arsenal of things to do if you do indeed have a minor tear, and you could feel confident with doing those things. You can also question doing nothing. I think that's an option. A normal, healthy woman with a good diet that's going to rest may not need any of these things. I myself have done many of them, essential oils, herbs, raw honey. I haven't done seaweed, but you know, that was my personal preference, and I felt like these things would support what I was already doing, which was resting and eating well. But I don't necessarily believe that we have to do anything, that with minor tears, we have to believe that in normal circumstances, again, in healthy people, that our bodies will heal. You know, it's ridiculous to think we need so much help. But again, what help you choose, whether it be natural or not, is your choice. So some questions to ask your birth attendant, because I did mention that, that I think are important, and to, you know, see how you feel about their answers. Just ask them in general, you know, how they feel about tearing, what they believe. Do they suture? Do they not? What sort of tears do they think need to be sutured, whether it be second degree, first degree, whatever? What happens if, you know, they think you've torn more majorly? So again, a third or fourth degree tear is, in my opinion, pretty serious. I don't think any of us want, you know, tears into our anus or into our anus and rectum. That is serious. I personally, if I saw that or, you know, thought a woman might have that sort of tear, I would definitely recommend getting that repaired by a surgeon. It's not at all leaving that kind of stuff alone. I certainly wouldn't for myself. So, you know, if you really do need to transport to get a tear repaired by a surgeon, I think that's valid. You know, be aware that many midwives, as a matter of course, do rectal examinations after birth, along with the vaginal examination to check for vaginal tears. You know, I think that's up to you. There are many midwives that say it's terribly negligent to not do a rectal examination because, you know, we won't know then if she's torn. For me, myself, I would never consent to a rectal examination after birth unless I thought I tore that badly for some reason. And I just think for myself, I would know. I would know if that were the case. But, you know, to each her own, just to make you aware that some may offer to do a rectal examination and you'll need to decide that for yourself. Or I don't know if, you know, some practitioners, whether it be doctor or midwives, you know, don't even necessarily ask consent, which is terrible. It's just sort of part of the exam. So I'm just saying that for you to be aware that sometimes that's part of the examination and you may decide that that is warranted in your situation for whatever reason. So if you do decide on sutures, you know, and you have to go to the hospital or you're in the hospital, still, I think ask to be shown what's going on. And as you probably can guess, when you ask that in a hospital setting, they'll look at you like you have 10 heads, but who cares? Ask for a mirror, have someone there to help hold it, and watch what's going on, or at least look at the before and after. Because again, this is your body and there isn't a one size fits all. I do think that suturing is completely overdone in a general sense. sense. And of course, my experience is in the home birth arena. I think it's being way overdone. I think way too many women are being sutured and thinking that's a part of natural physiological home birth when it's not. But again, if it does apply to you, then be informed. Ask to see. Ask what sort of tear it is, you know, what degree. Ask about the sutures being used. I mean, ask questions because this is your body. And as I've said already, nobody cares more than you do. So here ends my rather long podcast on tearing after birth. I hope this has given you some things to think about and some more information. And hopefully you're inspired to investigate some of these things further, whether it be actual, you know, textbook sort of education, or whether it's just asking yourself a few questions or preparing differently for your birth. I hope it's been helpful. So thanks again for listening. We have so many great resources, I think, at indiebirth.com. So many of them are free, such as these podcasts, blog articles. We do free consults every Monday. Excuse me. And we do offer paid consults as well as the 5-week online birth class, which is called How to Have an Indie Birth. So thanks again for listening, and catch you next time.